Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Welcome to Fitzdog Radio, 58-year-old guy in a skateboard hat. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel good about it. It's comfortable. What am I going to do? I bought a Mustang. I still do stand-up comedy like I'm 26. I mean, Jesus Christ, I'm not going to grow up. I'll grow up when I die, for God's sake. I'll be a child. Be like my mother. My mom was just out for Thanksgiving. She's still youthful, fun. She's the best. She was out here for like 5 or 6 days. She's just, you know, Bronx Irish sense of humor, bus balls, great laugh. She's got her father's laugh, Florence McCarthy from County Kerry. She's got his laugh. And we just had so much fun. She comes out every year for like 25 years. She's come out to L.A. for Thanksgiving. A lot of traditions, as people know. We swim in the ocean after dinner. We play soccer. We had a big dessert party back at the house. We had like 30 people over this year. And you know, went out to my daughter's bartending now part-time. And so we dropped into the bar she bartends at. And they had a live band, and my mom is out there dancing, and she's 82, wouldn't leave. She's the last. There was probably 20 of us at the bar that all met up, and she doesn't want to leave at the end of the night. She's the last one standing, always. After Thanksgiving, we all go to the beach, and we dive in the water. My mom stays back on that one with Tom O'Neill, author of Chaos, and they clean up the dishes. And they finish all the wine. All the wine. Somehow they get it clean, though. We come back and the house is clean. I don't know how they do it, but that's their tradition. And went to a museum. Went to LACMA, the museum in L.A. Went to Redondo for the day. Walked around the canals. Poker is a big tradition, too. Because she taught my kids how to play poker when they were probably about 6 and 8 years old. And we do that every year. Anyway, it was just fun. Baked an Irish soda bread. A lot of fun. And by the way, if you also want to have fun, Christmas is here. And it's time to pick up the Sunday Papers t-shirt for the holidays. If you want to grab a, one says, take it ish. And the other one has a very cool logo with a show on it. It's $26. Go to fitzdog.com. Check it out. Order it now. It'll get to you in about a week. High quality fabric. A lot of fun for yourself or for a loved one for the holidays. Also, I got a bunch of tour dates coming up. If you're in San Francisco this weekend, I will be there the 5th through the 7th at the Punchline, Cleveland Hilarities, December 13 and 14. Then I'm going to South Africa for a few weeks. When I come back, I'll be in Janesville, Wisconsin, Nyack, New York, Raleigh, North Carolina, Milwaukee. Just added Boston. I'll be in Boston, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Toronto. Go to fitzdog.com, get some tickets for my winter dates. Oh, it's gonna be busy. So anyway, I had fun today. Yesterday I interviewed my guest, the great Howie Mandel, who is kind of a renaissance man of entertainment. He's done it all. Actor, host, comedian. And we played a game that I started that I think, I don't know, see how it went. I think it went pretty well. It's a trivia game. We'll call it, what are we going to call it? Hidden trivia? Hidden trivia. So basically, I laid in three trivia questions throughout the interview in advance. So I'll tell you what they were. I was going to ask him what Nancy Sinatra's big hit song was. I was going to ask him to name five of the six original NHL teams, hockey. And I was going to ask him the longest running game show on the air today. And we'll see how he did. Should I say the answers now? Yeah, I'll tell you now. Boots Are Made for Walking is the song. The six teams are Toronto, Montreal, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, and the New York Rangers. Those were the six original NHL teams. And the longest running game show on the air is Price is Right. So we'll reveal the answers at the end, see how he did, see if he won a Sunday Papers t-shirt. A lot of anticipation. But Howie goes back, when my first time I auditioned for Catch a Rising Star, which was the club in New York back in 94. And I had an audition. Kevin Meaney set it up. And who walks in? I was about to go on. And then the club owner's like, hold on, we got to drop in. And it's fucking Howie Mandel, who went up and annihilates the room. Destroys. And then I get up and I bomb. So years later, I'm at the Montreal Comedy Festival, and he's Canadian. So he was hosting the, it's called the Gala, which is a big show that they record it and it plays all over the world. It's like this huge TV taping. And I went up and I bombed again. I don't want you to think I bomb a lot, but these were two Howie Mandel related bombs. And it was just, it was a three in the afternoon show. The whole audience was old people. I was on like 3 hours into the show. It was brutal. And I bombed. Anyway, so Howie comes out and he says to me, he whispers in my ear after I say goodnight and he's hosting, he goes, do you have another 5 minutes? And I go, you mean now? He goes, yeah. I go, fuck yeah. So he goes up to the mic and he says to the audience, okay, look, you guys have been here 3 hours. I know you're down. This guy's a great comic. I want you to give him some fresh energy. He's going to do another set. Please welcome back Greg Fitzsimmons. And I go up and I open by shitting on Deal or No Deal, which the crowd loved, Howie loved. And then I did 5 minutes. I'm not saying I crushed, but I got by. It was a usable TV set. And he's always had a place in my heart for doing that. He's a really generous comic. He supports other comics. He's a great dude. This interview was fucking good. He was very funny. And then he went deep. We got into male friendship and he was very vulnerable about it. And I learned a lot about him. I didn't know a lot of stuff that if you think you know Howie Mandel, I think you're going to learn different from this interview. A lot of layers. So anyway, you know him from, God, everything. Deal or No Deal, America's Got Talent. He's been doing it for 15 years. He was on St. Elsewhere. He was in Gremlins and really good dude. Here is Howie Mandel.
Hey now.
Hey now. I'm trying to get a seat. There I am.
Look at you.
How are you? I'm good. How are you? Had a good Thanksgiving?
I did. Well, let's start with that. Yeah, I did. We have a tradition here. I live in Venice Beach and yeah. Our neighbors are all pretty tight. We all been here for like 25 years. So every year for 20 years, we play soccer in the morning and then we dive into the ocean at like 7 o'clock at night. And then everybody comes to my house and we have a big dessert for like 50 people.
That was incredibly random, but yet traditional.
Yes, it's been a sort of combination of different goofballs putting. I'm in charge of the soccer. Somebody else is in charge of the dinner. Someone else does the beach. And and everybody gets drunk by the end of the night. We can tell the night is almost over. My mom drinks red wine And when she
Your mom's
started,
involved in the soccer game?
yes. So she flies out from Florida, and you can tell how far the night has progressed because the teeth get pink from the red wine, then they get
Oh,
red, and when it goes
okay.
purple, it's time for everybody to go home.
Oh, so it's like a litmus paper. She has litmus paper teeth that kind of let you the
Exactly.
timer.
Yes. It's like ninth grade chemistry meets alcoholism.
Oh, so I just like I know you're gonna think this is crazy, but I get together with my family, my
Yeah.
kids, their kids, and we eat turkey and we watch football. Can you imagine
No.
that? I
No. Who
mean,
said?
we're not like we never would have thought of playing soccer and jumping in the ocean and getting mom drunk.
Yeah.
But you are always have been so much more traditional than me in that
Well,
way.
I'm American. You come down from Canada and you see our tradition and you say, "Okay, I guess we eat turkey and watch football."
It's just who you meet as a an immigrant.
Yes.
I just try to fit in, and as you can tell, I didn't meet you first, because had
No.
I met you,
Yeah.
we would all be wet, and we'd have sand in our cracks,
Yep.
and we'd have discolored teeth,
Yep.
and we would, oh, look, it's Thanksgiving.
That's a lot to be thankful for. Wait, speaking of Canada, how about your Blue Jays, huh? Pretty hot this year?
Yes, I don't really follow baseball. I'm not a big baseball fan. Baseball is a little slow for me, but I will tell you, the Blue Jays, I threw out the pitch for the first game they ever won in their stadium, which was
Now,
probably in the 80s. And the stadium, which is the Rogers Center where they play, is most notably known for during, I think, an ABC broadcast of a World Series or something like that, where they panned up. There used to be, I don't know if it's still a Hard Rock, but there's a
oh,
hotel in,
right.
you know, but
Yep. Yeah, I think it was the first stadium to do that sort of like high-end combining hotels and good restaurants. I remember going there. It was the first.
it was the first, and it
Yeah.
closes and it opens and
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
everybody talks about the Cowboys Stadium now, but this was like we were so ahead of that, so we had the hotel where you can get a hotel room and actually watch a game from your hotel room. It looks out onto the field, but what
Yeah.
happened is ABC is shooting, and I think it was a high fly out to left field, and they panned up and you could see the wall in left field is actually the hotel, and
Yeah.
somebody was hitting a home run against the window. I mean, what is that? Third base is, wait, first base is making out. Second base
Third is the
is,
finger or the hand. It's manual.
oh yeah. So
Yeah. So it was a home
for the
run.
home run, he had her pressed against the window.
No.
What?
I have to think as a cameraman, you have to make an editorial choice at that point,
Live.
depending on the couple.
They didn't end on that. It cut away. It cut away. He was following the ball. I'm
Yeah.
gonna Google it as we sit here, and I'm telling you that it's true. It's
I
Toronto.
believe it. I have actually heard that story.
Oh,
Yes, I can
I just told
confirm.
it to you 10 seconds ago.
That's where I heard it.
Okay, so
Jesus. But what
Toronto.
about, all right,
Ask me more questions. I can Google and talk
let's
for
switch
10
over to
minutes.
the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs are such an
Not great.
exciting team to watch this year. Are you watching them?
No, I like
What?
football. I like American football. In fact, the
What?
last thing I watched American football as a Canadian, as a Canadian, I watched. Did you watch the Buffalo game last night in the
I
snow?
did. So much fun.
Oh, I love that. And I used to
Yeah.
sit and watch the CFL's Canadian Football League. And when I was an
Doug
Argonaut fan,
Flutie.
which not only Doug Flutie, do you know who? Well, Joe Theismann was our quarterback when I was watching, and a lineman was Lou Ferrigno.
No way, the Hulk?
Yes,
That's
who is, I
amazing.
think, for all intents and purposes, considered deaf. So
He
I
is
don't know how
deaf.
the huddle.
Yes. Yes.
In the huddle. What?
Yeah.
In the, yeah,
Well,
I don't know how you. Are you a big
wait.
baseball fan? It's your thing?
Well, obviously this year, I'm from New York and I live in LA, so this year's World Series was pretty exciting. But I figured you were a big Maple Leafs fan because they are like one of the original hockey. What was the original six teams? Do you remember which the original six teams were?
Boy, I feel like I'm on a game show that I got miscast for. No, but I could guess. You know,
Come on,
I'm not
guess.
really,
Let
I'm
me hear
not
you
very
guess what the
good.
first six hockey teams were, because Toronto was one of them.
It would have to be Boston,
Yeah.
Boston, Toronto, Montreal, the Red Wings, Detroit, Chicago, the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Where am I
That's
at? Five?
five. That's five.
One more. So I got five out of six.
Five out of
Why don't I give up
six.
there? I got five out of six.
All right, the last one is the New York Rangers.
Oh shit. Yeah, I
Who
could have
knew?
to be a big city.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this year I have a picture of myself with the Stanley Cup. I'm with the and the Stanley Cup actually came to my house.
No
And years ago
way.
I was the voice of the the NHL Stanley Cup commercials.
Okay.
Voiceover, and they brought the Stanley Cup to my house, which was, on one hand, as a Canadian, that is the, the bringing the Torah,
Yeah.
is to a rabbi's house. But
Right.
and then you think of all the fluids that have actually,
Oh yeah.
the germaphobe,
Yeah. Right.
people know the tradition, but the teams get to keep it for a while, and I think have their way with it.
You didn't drink out of it.
No, I didn't. The guy
Yeah.
who shows up has gloves on, and I just sat
Yeah.
beside it and took pictures. And I just did that last week. I just took pictures with the Stanley Cup because I'm a
Wow.
judge on Canada's Got Talent, and the company that airs Canada's Got Talent also has the hockey rights.
Yeah.
So I'm a proud Canadian. Well, I'm a proud American now. But I'm also a proud Canadian. I've got dual citizenship. I'm bi. I hope you edit that in a good way. But I have two citizenships, so I took a picture with the Stanley Cup. But my favorite sport to watch is American football.
Yeah,
And
this weekend was amazing. So many of the Chargers and the Rams both won. They both squeaked it by. But watching football in snow is about as exciting as it gets. And I feel bad because I think what's his name? The running
Bernard.
back for San Francisco,
Oh God. Nope.
he pulled his Achilles or something. I think he might be out for the season.
But that was just a disaster for the 49ers. That was horrible. It was just like a lot of bad skating,
Yes.
trying to hold on and falling, and just you would
What was
think.
great is that like a fullback could just keep going because the defenders normally they dig their feet in and they pull you down. But the only way to tackle in that snow, because the runner has the momentum, is to grab them and hold on and get dragged. So
Right.
guys were getting 7, 8, 10 extra yards after contact.
Right. But it was also a much slower game because they didn't, a lot of them didn't have the speed in the
Yeah.
snow. Well, Buffalo did, but no 49er could run. And
Yeah.
it was kind of funny because the people who were calling the game kind of figured out the tactics of how to do it. Like you have to catch it and you have to be moving in that direction
Right.
because if you already have some momentum, then you could keep going. But if you catch it and you're standing still, you can't get going on an icy, snowy
Right.
floor. But it's so great when you're tackled and then you watch them slide for another 10 yards. It made me feel homesick for my childhood.
Did you play American football growing up?
Canadian football. Yes. Well,
Well,
not
no,
soccer, but Canadian.
American.
You know,
American.
CFL has different, we have different rules. Do you know that?
It's a wider field, right?
Yeah. And there's, I think it's only three downs, right? Am I correct?
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's only three downs, and I did play in school. We were I was always fascinated. Our Super Bowl is called the Grey Cup. We have the Grey Cup, which
Yeah.
is how much boring m more boring can we, like it's a cup. That's the Super Bowl.
Well,
We have a bowl. We
Stanley.
have a cup. Yeah,
Well,
but it's only three
Stanley
downs.
sounds like a nerd, doesn't he? The
Other than
Stanley
Stanley
Cup.
Cup. We're American. That tells you, you know, if you look at our awards for our sports, it kind of tells you the difference between America and Canada, right? Stanley Cup, Super Bowl. You know, it's just it makes a big difference. But the Canadians, I don't think it's the same. I think they changed it, but they got mad at me. They wanted me to be a the entertainment at the Grey Cup, like they had a think of a Super Bowl dinner before the game. I'm gonna not take that call. No, I'm doing a little bit of a fundraiser, so I'm working the phones today. Anyway, they had eight Canadian teams. I'm not gonna ask you to guess who they were, but only seven names. Do you know that?
Now.
No, two of the teams, Ottawa and Saskatchewan, had the exact same name, the Rough Riders. It was the Ottawa Rough Riders and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And people used to say, no, one are the Rough Riders, and these are the Rough Riders. And I'm going, you really, really, you couldn't come up with one more fucking name? And that's, I said that on stage, and they got really upset with me. They didn't see the humor in it. I go, it's not like you have 3,000 teams and somebody picked us.
All
You
right.
have eight teams, seven names. And
And
some of the most artistic people come out of this country. You know that. A lot of directors and comedians and
sure,
music
Leonard Cohen.
and Cirque du Soleil and everything. Nobody come up with, and Rough Rider isn't even I don't think that's a name anybody really wants to share.
No, it sounds like a place you go for brunch in West Hollywood after you take some poppers.
Oh, the Rough Rider.
The Rough Riders.
They're not, I think now they, so their uniforms are I think it's black and red. I may be wrong, and that's okay for the people who comment on your thing, but they changed their name. Their uniform is black and red. It might be red and white, but I think it's black and red. And then so now they call themselves the Red Blacks.
Nice.
Huh?
Well, listen, the last time I saw you, you were kind enough to have me on your podcast, Howie Mandel Does Stuff. We
Oh.
danced, we had a dance off, but I feel like there was never a winner announced from the dance off. Or is
What?
it just a celebration?
Well, it's both. So it is a celebration and there is a winner. I'm not one to gloat, you know, and I didn't want to. I think if people watch the episode, it's just obvious. And I think I didn't want to, and you're the guest. And I wanted to make you feel comfortable, but I think it was just obvious.
Oh,
And
no, I don't think it was at all. I think that number one, you had a home field advantage. You planned it. You stretched probably. I'm guessing you had a choreographer. Paula Abdul was back there with
there's no
you.
arguing. There's no arguing. I don't know if you know what I do when I'm not doing your podcast, but I judge talent. And dancers come from all over the world to hear what Howie Mandel has to say about their moves. So
Isn't that interesting?
don't.
Isn't that interesting? You know,
Yes.
I mean,
Nobody's more surprised than Howie Mandel.
you got kids coming in from Dayton, Ohio on the Greyhound, and they hit LA and they look at that Walk of Fame, and you're on. I'm guessing you got a star on the Walk of Fame, right?
Yes,
And
and
they
a stain on Sepulveda.
and you did not put your name on that one. And their dream is, does Howie Mandel, a comedian, think I can sing?
Who would have thunk?
Who is
You know,
the
I didn't even think this was a job, let alone whether I'm qualified for it or not. You know, as somebody who's been in the business for 45 years, I just wanted to strangers to like me. You know, that's, and I would do anything and humiliate myself just to make you like me and think I was a little bit humorous, and hopefully you enjoyed spending, you know, a few minutes with me. And then, you know, my whole career has been this weird whirlwind of I can't fucking believe what I'm doing. But this, just judging, and the truth is, I think I'm really good at it. And I think I'm really good at it because I've gotten really comfortable in being authentically honest. I don't think I'm right. I just think I'm authentically honest. I don't think anything's right when it comes to any art form.
Right.
If you like it, it's great. If you don't like it, it doesn't mean it's not great. It just means you don't like it. So I never tell anybody that something's not good. I could just tell you what I think,
Right.
and you could take that with a grain of salt, or you could maybe use it and find some inspiration behind my words, and hopefully.
What comedians have come off that show with, has it launched anybody's comedy careers?
No, but here's what it does. I don't know that it's, oh, yes. I shouldn't say no. I'm saying no because no comedian has won yet. But I believe that any comedian that comes on, and this is just by virtue of when, how long have you been in the business, Griff?
35 years.
Okay, so when we started out, there were places like The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, and things like that where. And for me, it was, HBO's Young Comedian special,
Right.
where you did it, and then the next day you had a career. The ability for people to get anything is so siloed now in as far as what you download, what your algorithm is, what you're
Right.
watching on YouTube, what stations you're watching out of 600 stations, what you're streaming. Somebody can be playing a stadium in your city and you don't even know their name,
Right,
and yet
I know. It's
that could
amazing.
happen. So my point is, any comedian that has come on to our show, whether they believe it was a good experience or not, has benefited by it because, and I always say this to them, comedy is probably one of the hardest, and I'm not saying this because I'm a comedian and you're a comedian. Comedy is one of the hardest acts to appreciate. And the easiest thing, and I hope I don't get killed for this, but singing kind of bores me. And
Yeah.
it bores me because you can walk into, a Ramada Inn, or you can go camping with friends and they can pull out a guitar and a lot of people can sing.
Yeah.
And 9 out of 10 times they're singing somebody else's song. So I don't know what the creativity, and you can go take guitar lessons and you could even take singing lessons and learn how to sing. So unless you're great and you stand out, I'm not bowled over by that. But I don't think people appreciate somebody who comes out there virtually naked, and just spews their sensibility, their sense, and if it's not hitting, it hurts worse than any other kind
Way
of
or
talent
yeah,
because
right.
you need more. If somebody comes out and sings a song, even a mediocre song, everybody's going to sit quietly for the duration of the song. And then when the song ends, we just know it because that's what you do. You applaud and you go, yay. And they don't know. They think it went well. If a comedian comes out here and does da 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 da, and it's
Yeah,
quiet,
it would be like the singer having to stop every 15 seconds and go, is it good? And everybody goes, yeah, it's good.
right.
And then continue playing the song.
So the point is, and I always say that, I say, especially on AGT, people in the room, when somebody's been hanging themselves upside down and lighting themselves on fire, and they've got music and 10 dancers, and then
Yeah.
you bring on little Joey, who tells you a little story about how his mom used to force him to do his homework. People are going, wow, this isn't as good as lighting yourself on fire. But
Right.
there's actually more involved, and it's also scarier. So what I say to people who enter it, and I think every comic should do it, and I think every comic should do it at every level. We're not an amateur show. Think of it as the U.S. Open. People just compete, and you could win it. Where are you going to get an audience? We get 1 billion hits on YouTube a year.
Wow.
Everybody who's on it, whether you believe they've done well or not, will get more bookings, will be able to sell their tickets for a higher price, will be exposed. If three people at our desk aren't responding, if 1,500 people in the room aren't responding, don't play it for that. Play it for look into that camera
Right.
and talk to millions and millions and millions of people internationally, and I
Yeah.
promise you are going to end up in a better place. If you make it all about Heidi Klum or Sofia Vergara, Chitara or Simon Cowell laughing or deciding whether that is a great joke, then that's on you.
Right,
you know?
right.
And
no, I had a friend. Do you remember a guy named Tom Cotter who came on?
Tom Cotter, I think, did well.
He
did.
He came in second place. He lost to a dog act, but Tom's one of my dearest friends, and he absolutely, his career went up three or four notches from that. And guess
So
what?
did
It
Preacher
stayed
Lot
there.
then.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
And it
So did.
stayed there.
And it should. You know, you just need to have constant exposure.
Right.
And people, I talk to comics all the time. They go, I don't want to go in that way. I go, so where are you going to go where live in same day and same time, 6 million people are going to see you? It's
yeah.
not going to happen on anybody's podcast.
Right.
And 6 million people are going to see you, and it's going to live forever on YouTube and TikTok, and you're going to be seen by 10 million people. Just put your shit together, put it out there. It's not about winning the contest. It's about being exposed and raising your career and competing. And everybody from Taylor Williamson to Preacher Lawson to all these comics, Tate Face is a mime, a comedic mime, and so is Piff the Magic Dragon, who is a you know, a comedic. He's got both those guys have their own room in Vegas now because of AGT.
Yeah,
you know,
crazy. Now, and it's been going for so long. If I feel, what has it been like, 7 or 8 years?
20.
What?
This is our 20th
no.
year is starting. Yes.
Damn. Someday you're going to be the longest run. I wonder what the longest running game show is in the history
probably
of
Wheel
TV.
of Fortune or Jeopardy or any of those.
Oh, yeah.
Way before us. But, you know, the thing about it is, and comics, we're sensitive people. You know, one of my friends, Dan Natterman, did the show. And he hated his experience on it. Hated it.
Uh-huh.
And I thought he did amazing. Simon didn't love him. And Simon said something about one of his jokes. Dan Natterman is one of the funniest guys. Do you know Dan?
One of my favorite jokes of all time is one of his. He says, the gym teacher comes into health class one day and he says, kids, today we're gonna learn sex ed. And I'm gonna teach you how to put on a condom. And if you're wondering why I'm holding a banana in my hand, I can't get an erection on an empty stomach.
That's hysterical. So that's Dan Natterman. Dan Natterman is one of the funniest guys. And I don't blame anybody for not, Simon didn't love it. Okay. And Simon didn't get what Dan was doing and told him honestly about, he goes, you didn't make me laugh, which is true. There's always many more people in the world that aren't going to laugh than whatever we could capture on our shows or whatever, right?
Well, British people don't get American comedy anyway.
I don't know that that's true. You really think so?
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. But anyway, he told him that, and Dan Natterman just he said, you know, Simon, you may know music really well, but I don't think you know the difference between good comedy and your asshole or something like that. He said something like that in the moment, and the whole audience went, whoa. They left that in the show. It's one of the best moments.
That's great.
In the history of AGT. And I remember going backstage after, and Dan was like beside himself. And I said, Dan, you created a great moment. You know, all these moments. And that's what another thing I'll say to comics. You need to be funny and be yourself from the moment you walked out there. Don't be like a magician. Don't come out there all morose and unless that's your act, and then go, hey, how is everybody?
Yeah. Right.
Be funny from the beginning. Be witty and also respond to what's happening in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that happened, I think it was Taylor Williamson was having a little bit of a rough time, and he noticed the fact that Heidi Klum was not responding. So he started directing it to Heidi Klum and created this romance.
Yeah.
And that launched him into making it into the finals. And they brought him back even every year because they had this faux Heidi Klum, Taylor Williamson thing, which also raised him a bunch of levels from where he was doing comedy. So I would say anybody that are, and even today for me, we all need to continually be exposed.
Yeah.
I'm on this podcast. So if I had the opportunity, even at the level I'm on, to be on AGT at this time, I would do it. Michael Winslow was just on a couple of years ago because we haven't seen him in a long time. You remember the guy that
Of
makes
course,
all
the
the sound
sound effect guy. He used to play Purple Haze with his
effects?
mouth. Yeah.
Yes. He does it.
It's
Yeah.
amazing. Are you inviting me on AGT? I mean, is that what you're trying to get to here?
I know you would do really well.
Well, I'm a little dark.
That's why it would do really well.
Yeah.
To me, and I keep saying this to people, even if something spectacularly doesn't work,
Yeah.
there's something, you know what I mean? You grab your,
Yeah, absolutely.
and then calling it out for
Yeah.
what it is. This is, oh, this isn't my audience. This is not my, you know, there was this duo, this comedy duo. Do you know who Chop and Steel are?
No.
I think I've got the wrong names, but I think it's Chop and Steel. So they got known a few years back for they would go on morning shows like Good Morning Cleveland.
Yeah.
And Good Morning Cleveland had no idea they were comedians, and they would do like a strength act, or they'd go on as experts in something that they weren't. But they would
That's
book
good.
these shows. But if you knew, these things went viral online. And you go, oh my God, this, like, I think their strength act was like they were breaking twigs. You can do like horrible, you know, he could step on a basket and crutch him. And but they were the hosts of Good Morning Cleveland or Good Morning Wyoming. They took these bookings really seriously. They didn't have a research department, and these were funny little things. I think they got themselves, we didn't know, booked on AGT. And their bit, I don't know that it made it to the air. I don't think it made it to the air, but it did make it to the, they did a documentary. He just pissed himself on stage. Yes.
No. And what was the stated intention of the act? What did they say they were
I
going
think
to do?
that's what they went on. I think they were going to do some sort of display of strength or acrobatics or whatever. And the guy just stood there, and I didn't know that they, nobody knew they were comedians.
Yeah.
And one of them actually urinated, which I don't think NBC or AGT liked it. But then I saw, I was in a theater and I saw the documentary, and they had, I guess they had a friend in the audience that recorded them, and
That's great. Let me
but I'm
ask you
just
this,
saying,
because you've been doing it longer than me. You've been doing it, what, 40 years?
more 45.
45 years. What is the, I'm sure you never pissed yourself, but what did you ever have a moment on stage where you lost your voice or you shit yourself or you what happened?
So I was in Puerto Rico, and I was playing one of the, I was going to do a concert at a casino, and the I was in the restaurant, and the chef came over and said he was so delighted to have Howie Mandel in his hotel. Did you order the seafood that I made tonight? And I said no. He go, I actually ordered the steak, and the steak was there. He goes, please, you got to try the seafood. So he brings me the seafood, and I eat some of the seafood, and then he brings me something else that he tried, and I can't say no. And he was just being the sweetest guy, and he was giving me all this stuff that he had cooked. And then, like within an hour, have you ever gotten food poisoning?
Yes, it's the worst thing in the world.
I think there's probably things worse. I mean, as a Jew, I've heard about the Holocaust. I don't know if food poisoning is the worst thing in the world, but the truth of the matter is, I it was percolating
Yeah.
my stomach, and this is like an hour before the show, and I go, I don't know what to do. I just don't feel well. I don't feel well. I'm nauseous, and I think like I'm going to explode out of every fucking orifice. I'm gonna anyway. Come showtime, it's 9 o'clock, ladies and gentlemen. Howie Mandel, I walk, it's packed,
Yeah.
packed. And at the time, I don't do this anymore, and this is why. If you go see a show now, like every other comic I know, I use a handheld mic, right?
Yeah.
But up until that night, when I was on tour, because I'm so, I move a lot, and I like to use my hands, and I like to pick up props, and I always had a lav on,
Yeah.
just a wireless mic attached to my shirt. And I'm on stage and I'm on stage and I could feel my stomach grumbling and growing and I'm nauseous and I think I'm gonna just empty out of every orifice, right? And I could feel it. I'm also concerned that the audience is, but I just, let me get through the show. I'm on for 15 minutes, 20 minutes most. And then I just go, good night. I was just so sick. I run off the stage. I run through the back halls. I run into my dressing room. Nobody knows where I'm going and nobody knows what's going on. And I just rip down my pants, sit on the toilet. And I'm telling you, have you ever been to Niagara Falls? It's like the worst, the worst. But nobody knew what was happening or where I go.
Yeah.
Except my crew, somebody runs and they start banging and they go, Howie, Howie. And I'm going, leave me the fuck alone. They go, Howie, leave me the fuck alone. And somebody says, take your mic off. So the whole audience heard my sitting ovation to them. The most embarrassing. I never, and it's a hotel. It's a resort. I was staying there for another 2 days. I couldn't make eye contact. I couldn't look at anybody. That's the worst moment I've ever had on
It's the worst thing that's ever happened in Puerto Rico. I mean, my God.
Wow.
Did you go back on, or that was it?
No. I was sick. But then the next morning, I wouldn't go out to the pool. I didn't have, I
Of
ordered
course
breakfast in the
not.
room.
Yeah.
I just, it was like horrible. It was
If that guy did
horrible.
it to you on purpose. I mean, you're the king of pranks. Maybe that was his prank on you.
I don't know. But from that day on, I've never worn that. Somebody goes, says, you want a wireless mic? I go,
Yeah.
no,
Yeah.
I don't want that.
What was the prank? Todd Barry's a good friend of mine. And
Oh
when
my
we were
God.
coming up, we were like, kind of fledgling comedians. We hadn't really made it big or anything. And not that I have now, I'm sitting in a room with a plant. But you
I'm
brought
trying
him
to.
on.
I'm sitting in a room with a picture of myself.
You brought him on. Do you remember this prank you did to
Yeah, so
Todd
I'll tell
Barry?
you that. I'll tell you. So Todd Barry, who I love, and I actually, this makes me feel bad because I wanted, I videotaped it. I have a videotape of it,
Yeah.
and I asked years later when I had a talk show, I invited him on and I wanted to show the tape and he wouldn't let me, so he feels bad about it. But it was in upstate New York. There was I sometimes play these theaters in the round. They have these theaters in the round. And if you've ever been to them, Westbury is in New York like this.
Westbury Music Center, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of them. This wasn't Westbury. That was in upstate New York. I'm trying to remember the name. It doesn't matter the name of the theater, but you perform on a disc. And and I love them because the audience is 360 degrees. So you're never far from anybody. It'd be 3,000 people in there and you're
Yeah.
not far. But traditionally, these stages are made. They can have a music group on there, and the music the stage can swivel. It turns, so
Yeah.
it's kind of like a Lazy Susan.
Yeah.
We don't use that as comedians because you could just pace and walk around and face wherever you want. But in order to do that technically, in the middle of the stage or just off to the side, you could take one of the floorboards out of the stage, and there's a place to plug in all your monitors. So there's not, if they're spinning, there's not cords being wrapped
Okay,
around.
yeah.
You plug into the middle of the. For whatever reason, that when we showed up, we were showing up for a sound check, they had that door open. And Todd says to me, so where do we enter from? And we're standing like way back, and there's an aisle that goes down the stage. I go, we just go down this aisle. Go to the stage. He goes, well, then after the show, where do we go? And there's aisles, 360 is about six aisles, sections he could leave. And he goes, where do you leave from? I think he was just making conversation. I go, you see the trap door open on the stage? That's where you leave from. He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, what'll happen is you go into that trap door and just bend down and then knock on the floor because it's not, that thing was only like 2.5 feet deep where you plugged in everything. Knock on that, they'll open it up and they take you down the stairs and you'll end up back in the dressing room. He goes, can we run it? I go, we have no time to run it. Anyway, so he goes back to his dressing room. So then I go to the stage manager and I go, listen, here's what's going to happen. Todd Barry's going to get up on stage. He's going to do his act. when he says good night, leave that door open to where you plug in all the speakers. Leave that off the stage. He'll see it. He won't fall into it. And then when he says good night, have all the spotlights focus on that hole and just leave them there, you know? And you'll see what will happen. He goes, really? I go, yes, just do that. Okay. So Todd goes out, and Todd is one of the funniest guys I know.
Oh, great.
3,000 people are screaming. They love him. It's hard. It's going to be hard for me to go out and follow him. He's brilliant. And he goes, enjoy Howie Mandel. Good night. There's going to be a 50 minute between the opening act and me. They take 15 minutes so people can go get drinks and buy merch and whatever they have to do. So there's going to be a short intermission, then enjoy Howie Mandel. Thank you. And he goes, thank you. And all the spotlights go to that hole. And he goes, thank you. And then he walks over to the hole. He steps down into the hole. The hole, as he's standing in the hole, maybe comes up mid-thigh. So and then he, with the lights still on and the audience still applauding, he bends down, and I could see he's knocking on, it's not a door, but he's knocking on the floor there. And then the lights are still on him. And then the applause starts to, you know, they've been applauding for a while. And you could see like the hunch of his back sticking out of the middle of the stage, and he's knocking on the floor. And then the house lights come up because they're going to take an intermission. Everybody kind of stopped, and you could see people milling around, and Todd still in the center stage. And you know, every so often, because he's not getting an answer, you see his head. He looks up, and he's looking around like they're not answering the door, and I'm stuck here in the middle of 3,000 people. He's there for what seems like an eternity. And finally, he goes, fuck it. And he gives up, and he stands up, crawls out of the hole. And, you know, excuse me, up and down the aisle, people are milling because they're going to get their drinks. And he's going, excuse me, pardon me, excuse me. It was somewhat humiliating, and I feel bad because he's a sweet guy and he's a funny guy and he's brilliant. But even to this day, I have that video.
No, if people understood Todd's personality, he is the most does not want to be fucked with guy. He is the most like button down that is so perfect knowing him.
Yeah, but I felt bad
So you
because
got it on videotape and you've never shown it?
no.
No. All right.
No. If you can get
Well,
him to say yes, I'll give it to you. You can.
someday there'll be a roast of Todd Barry and we'll have to get that tape and play it.
Oh, because I used to be notorious for fucking with my opening acts,
Yeah.
you know, and I did it a lot. And nobody I did it more to. I wrote a book, my biography, and there's a guy who appears on my podcast all the time, Lou Dinos. I mean, I feel horrible for the things that I did to Lou, but I
Yeah.
did horrible things to Lou.
Yeah.
But it was funny.
He goes on the pod. He wasn't there the day I was there, right?
No.
Oh.
He's not there all the time, but when he has a minute, he comes in and he sits there, and he annoys some guests, he annoys some of the audience, and he's really funny, and he's a sweet guy, and I
I
love Lou.
love your daughter. Jacqueline Schultz is so funny. She's really great on the show.
She is. I'm so proud of her. She's a mom of two, and she's getting old. She's so I get to work with my kids, and my son actually built this studio I'm in, and he produces. He's in the other room right now producing. He produces. I don't know what's called, The Girls Next Door. He's got Jason Alexander from Seinfeld. He does. He
Wow.
does a lot with Logan Paul. He did. When Logan's not in Puerto Rico and does it here, he's produced that. And we have the
Does it
Playmate
do Bill Maher?
room. Bill Maher's does a lot. No, Club Random. He doesn't produce it, but Bill Maher has a company in this building with it's Billy Corgan and Fred Durst and a whole bunch of
It's
others.
amazing.
Michael.
Yeah, but I loved seeing you and your daughter. It was like Sinatra and Nancy Sinatra. What was that song she had?
These shoes were made for walking.
Oh
These
yeah. I love
were
that.
made for walking. And that's my daughter. When you think of these boots were made for walking, you think of Howie's daughter, Jack. I love the reference to an old Nancy Sinatra song.
I well, my father was a AM radio host my whole life growing. He was one of the biggest radio guys in New York growing up, and
Really?
and he played a lot of Sinatra, and I remember Nancy Sinatra. I used to dance to it when I was a kid.
That's why you were happy with the dance challenge on my podcast.
Yes. Always happy to dance. Always.
So that's why you went into the business? Was it you following your father's footsteps?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's when you're a kid and you see, because he did radio, but he also loved to put on a tuxedo and go to charity events and MC the charity event. And he would get up there and I'd see him with his notes before he went. He was not a stand-up comic, but he had all his notes. He had his set stories. He had these great. He was a real New Yorker, grew up in the Bronx. I mean, you walk into any tavern in New York City and people are yelling out, "Hey, Fitz, come on out, let me buy you a drink." Like, he was just a real man of New York. And so he would tell these great New York stories, and then he would bust people's balls. He was like real insult comic kind of guy, but people always took it the right way. And I watched that, and I became obsessed with stand up from a young age. And and you were definitely one of the guys that I watched when I was a kid that I was like, I think the breadth of what people did in comedy back in the 80s was so much more interesting. Today, it's become very linear. People come out, they take the mic out of the stand, they talk about themselves, they do a model. I'm not putting it down. I just think you go back to like Bobcat Goldthwait and Stephen Wright and Emo Phillips and you and Kinison, and like people were doing, they were going much harder at
But
the.
you know what? There is, and I think that's coming back. I was trying to revive the Montreal Comedy Festival,
Oh,
and
yeah, that's right.
they fought me all the way because I think one of the problems with some of these comedy festivals, it's that, and that's very 80s, and in the 80s that was kind of new, to see, and but there was a breadth of stand-up comedy was kind of new. But like I'm a huge fan of what's going on now, predominantly in Austin. But Kill Tony is, we had a thing at the Montreal Comedy Festival called New Faces, and that's where a lot of the
Right.
SNL people got their starts. They got seen or got asked to audition.
Right.
Most famous one was Shane Gillis, who ended up getting it and then losing it and now
Yeah.
hosting it and now
Yeah.
being bigger than ever. But if you look at Kill Tony, did you watch Kill Tony?
I've been on it like 20 times. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Kill Tony, and I was
Yeah.
only on it once. I think that it's that you see that breadth again,
Right. Right.
everything from Cam Patterson to some other great comics who are really different,
Yeah.
and do different things and are pushing the envelope, and it doesn't look like 80s comedy anymore.
Right,
And
right.
the Kill Tony itself doesn't look like 80s comedy anymore.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of guys. Kevin Meaney was a dear friend of mine. Did you were you friends with Kevin at all?
I wasn't friends, but I was a fan.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
didn't know him, but I was a fan of him.
Yeah, he was always great. Who are your good friend? Obviously, you have people you work with, but like, who would you say is like your best male friend?
I wish I had good friends. I think you're my best friend.
Like to be friends with you. I'd like to be closer.
Well, you wouldn't. Yeah, I don't have a lot of friends, but my best male friends is probably my manager. His name is Michael Rotenberg, and Michael
He used to
Rotenberg.
be my manager. Yeah, I know Michael.
You see, he started one of the biggest companies there are, 3 Arts, and they're
Yeah.
responsible for some of the biggest comedians you've ever seen. But Michael lived on my couch while he was going to law school.
Well,
And
you
we
guys are
grew up.
both from Toronto, right?
Yeah, we grew up we, since we were both 14. We've been best friends.
Wow, that's
And
amazing.
that would be my best male friend.
Yeah, he's a good man. Let me ask you this, like, do you ever find like nobody talks about male friendships? It's always about like in the movies, every it's always about romance, but nobody talks about like how intimate male friendships can be, and yet there can also be elements of like competitiveness. Do you think that we take male friendships for granted and don't really look at them the same way?
Well, I don't take friendship for granted. I grew up pretty lonely. I don't have a lot of friends, you know, and people didn't like me. And what I talk about in my career, everything I've ever been punished for, expelled for, alienated for is what I get paid for. You know, as a, you know, I have ADHD and anxiety and depression, and this sensibility was making my trying to make myself laugh is what kind of got me through and is my survival technique. And there's a stigma attached to, you know, being open about mental health. So I didn't have a lot of friends, but and there isn't a lot about it. But one of the things that I found incredibly inspiring just recently was Will Ferrell's new movie with his friend. I don't remember her name now, but do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know this.
Oh, it's a movie. It's brilliant. It's a documentary about, I think she was a head writer on SNL, and then originally he transitioned, and then
Okay.
he takes a road trip with her now.
Yeah.
I think he was surprised by the fact that I don't think he saw this coming. And this she was married with a child, and then came to a time in his life where he felt he was not he. And you should go look it up. It's a
Wow, that sounds
really
amazing.
sad, funny documentary. I think it's on Netflix right now. But there's a real compassion in friendships, and I love I the friendships that I do have, I cherish. I'm not a social person. I'm somebody who locks myself away even when I'm on the road. I don't go out during the day. I'm
Yeah.
not really, this is weird because, you know, that's what my business is, but I'm not a communicator. I would rather, and even if I am out in public, I don't like going to parties. I don't like events, and I love watching, and I love being quiet. And I don't like, I love my time on stage. My time on stage is my most comfortable time in my l life because that's the only thing that keeps me in the moment. And on any given day, you know, a couple times a week, I drop in on the clubs, even when I'm not touring, you know, go to the Improv or the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Store or the Ice House and do a set because it's fun and it keeps me current and I get to write. But I don't, I'm
But I
not.
think the ADHD, because I have the ADHD as well, and I think and I see one of my kids has it, and it affects her friendships, and it's difficult to stay connected to somebody when you have ADHD. Like, friendships rely on listening, reacting, and staying in touch. And we have ADHD. When you're not around the person, you kind of forget about them, and you're not the person that texts and checks in and all that stuff, because you just get sort of sucked into whatever distraction you're in your life. And that's not the expectation people have in close friendships.
I also have this overlying discomfort with and concern that of how I'm being perceived outside of show business. So if we're having a discussion, any discussion, I've never walked away from any discussion without off of a platform like here. I'm just answering questions basically, and it doesn't really feel like if you and I just went for lunch. I promise you, for 2 or 3 hours after the lunch, I would think, did I say something that I
Oh,
offend him?
really?
I think I offended him. I think I might have said something, or he, I know he laughed at something I said, but does he knows that I was kidding, right? He knows. I'm so concerned about everything, and it runs over in my head over and over and over again ad nauseum. So I'm just, if I stay in the fetal position alone, I'm more comfortable. I live in fear of offending, hurting, and being a nuisance to anybody.
Is that OCD?
I don't know what it is.
Well,
That's my OCD manifests itself in very different ways, misophobia and intrusive thoughts. But that might be if they keep going, that could be always. My mind is going places that really is not comfortable. So I have to stay busy and I have to stay doing. This is an easy conversation because this is, a podcast. So I'm just
Right.
reactive. I'm being more reactive than active, and in
Right.
life and social situations where I have to be active, I'm not confident with my actions or myself or how I'm being perceived and what effect I'm having on others.
Right. Interesting. And then, so you've been married now, what, like 30 years or something?
No, also like four, I got 44.
Do you find that in your marriage, because I do with my marriage, like it's my place where I don't feel like that. It's a place where I just feel so unjudged and accepted that I think I spend a disordinate amount of time alone with my wife.
Well, and that's the only place that I'm really comfortable, and the only person, like you're saying, best male friends, but that's my, oh my God, there's another human being that knows me better than I know me and
Right.
has absolutely no expectations, understands I never, well, I do apologize for things all the time,
Right.
but you're right. And and I know most people can't find that. And I know how lucky I am to have found that,
Yes.
and I feel that I'm so much luckier than she is,
Right.
because this is a I'm a piece of work, and even though people might, see me on something or spend a couple of hours with me at a show and think this might be fun, this is not. Don't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
not fun.
yeah, yeah. Well, I think when you find the right person, it's the right person because they don't cling to your shortcomings, and they love the things about you that maybe people don't see on TV, you know?
She makes me better.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be sitting here today if it wasn't for her. I got to tell you, like, for a guy, and we talked about this on my podcast, who says yes to everything and is tries to be as and works really hard at trying to be positive. I mean, there are times where I just wanted to give up, just
Yeah.
give up, and it was incredibly painful. And she's the one that said, no, you need this,
Yeah.
you need this. And I get. Listen, as somebody who's an entertainer and wants to share whatever it is we have, nobody gets more out of it than me.
Yeah.
Like, as much as an audience may enjoy a little show that I put on, if it goes well, that's for me. It's always for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think when I hear some people talk about like Ellen DeGeneres is always like I'm just happy to spread joy to people. I'm happy to give to them, and that's not true. I would love that to be the paradigm, but the truth is there's many levels where it feeds me, whether it's my ego, whether it's my itch to be creative, whether it's
See
to
her last
not.
special?
What's that?
Did you see her last special?
Yes.
I felt really bad. I thought it was wonderful, but that's where it wasn't that.
Right,
Do you think
right.
so?
Yes, it was very much, it felt like a spin. It felt like a justification. I didn't see anything in there that took on her being canceled from Hollywood other than justifying it. And I was a producer on her show for the first two seasons, and I felt like she's one of the best. I took the job because I felt like she's one of the best comedians ever. She's amazing. And I felt like that special was an opportunity for her to go a little bit deeper and peel back some layers and explain, why she, interacted with people the way she did. And people would have accepted it. People would have said, wow, you're a human, and she didn't do that.
Where didn't she do that?
When she said, I am demanding, I am tough, I'm a woman. And then they clapped for 5 minutes. And it was like, well, no, but you also are somebody that made people cry at work every day. And you're somebody who fired people relentlessly. And you created an atmosphere of fear in the workplace. And I think there should have been some accountability for that because people know that.
But isn't that justified in the sense that when that camera is turned on and you're seeing the show, she does stand-up comedy really well. She hosts really well, and she's really likable. In the fact that we are all multi-dimensional, and I'm not condoning, I'll just say that, I think we've all done things in our life and in our job and even in our own marriages where I've said something to my wife that I had to apologize for, that I had to, and I don't know that the place to apologize is on a Netflix special, but what I got out of the Netflix special, but you must have a much different take on it because you were inside and I wasn't inside the show. But my take on it is I'm not perfect. I am flawed, but this is who I am. And the fact that my imperfections and my methodology became fodder for the world and attacked me, this is how I felt about it. And yes, I am. She ended up with a really good show. I'm not condoning that somebody should be brought to tears to make the show great, but I thought that she really humanized herself with that special.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, I think I'm too far inside of it. And I think my expectations of what needed to be said were, and I think I can, like, I defend Louis C.K. He's a good friend. So maybe from the other side of that, I felt like his apology was, I don't want to say sufficient because for different people, they had different expectations of what his apology should be, but I certainly have given him I have accepted him back if I ever fully rejected him even. I accept that he is imperfect and I felt like he did apologize. And maybe because I'm friends with him, I'm processing it different than how I was left with my experience with Ellen working on the show.
Was your personal experience rough?
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, look, I got a lot out of it, and I've worked for a lot of tough people in my life, so it did not, I was not traumatized by it, but I always felt like the disparity between who she presents herself as and who she truly was. But I think maybe your point is she's putting out a show that brings a lot of joy to a lot of people, and
Right,
in the end,
and
maybe
the
that's worth
key.
something.
Key word, it's a show. It's a show. You weren't in the show. You were in her life. You were in her work. You weren't in the sh you didn't do the show. I think even now this discussion that you and I are having, and just my persona right now is so far from what people perceive me as. The perception of people, you know me more, you've seen me backstage, you're in the business. I think the average person thinks of me as a very light, silly little guy, and that's okay. And I know that there's people that get joy from that. There's people that laugh at it. There's people that mock it. I'm killed every day on social media. Are we responsible for making sure that whatever persona we're putting out there is close to who we are? I think now there is more of a reaction to authenticity. And that's why TV is going away and social media is kind of growing because they're seeing this more than they see those afternoon shows, which are just light. And it wasn't a place for her to, if she was frustrated with somebody, to air that and the camera was on. But if she is frustrated, even wrongly frustrated with somebody, it's humanity, and you make the choice of whether to be her friend, whether to be her employee, whether to be her partner,
Or to quit,
or quit. And I don't think there's anything wrong with quitting or not liking it or even speaking up against it. I don't think we have a an obligation to be, if our brand is the nicest person in the world. Did you see the new and it's kind of in the same vein. Did you see the Netflix documentary on Martha Stewart? To me, it's like kind of the same thing.
Well, yeah, I think It falls into a similar category because I know somebody that worked for her, and she was very tough, and she had a tough reputation. But the point is that I think that that documentary made was she got thrown in jail because she behaved the way a man would. I mean, she got torn down because she was the CEO of a multinational corporation that she started from scratch, and that as a woman, it was a very different experience. To being called a bitch is so minimizing and marginalizing to somebody who's really just behaving like a highly successful executive.
But aren't you saying the exact same thing about Ellen, where you're saying
Yeah.
her because she was this incredibly successful comedian who lived on the brand of being kind to each and every person, and that was the just because that's what she built, and
Yeah.
that's business, and that was making a lot of people, men and women and companies, millions of dollars,
Yeah.
just because that wasn't what was happening on a day-to-day basis. 24/7, that she should be demonized for that.
Or
I don't.
thrown in jail. Yeah.
No, but I'm
Now,
talking about Ellen, even
about
deeper.
Al. Yeah. No, it's a good point. No, you definitely, I have to separate my experience from what her overall effect has been, as a public person. Has she had people raise money for charity? Has she brought empathy to certain causes? Absolutely.
And has that hour been an hour of escape?
Right.
Even though in the background, Greg and a bunch of other people maybe are getting berated, maybe getting humiliated, maybe are set up in a weird way, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I also think that she has a very, as somebody who is a proponent of mental health and seeing how I came from an incredibly coddled background. I know her background. Her background, I don't know it well, but I know that, you know, her father was this religious zealot who wouldn't
Yeah.
let take medications, and the mother escaped with the children, and
Yeah.
she doesn't have a great healthy upbringing.
Right,
She's
right.
actually made something of herself, you know,
Yeah.
for so I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying.
No, it's not. I think it's a very healthy discussion because I think I have to check my opinion of her a little bit. I think it's very reactionary and maybe not fair. And part of it is I was in an NDA for a long time, but now that she left the country to go to England, I'm like, all right, I guess I can talk about her. But being under an NDA kind of makes it build up a little
Not
bit
only being
too.
under an NDA, the difference is that you're the first person that I've talked to personally that probably had firsthand issues,
Right.
you know, because you were face to face and had the wrath of whatever this is,
Right.
whatever those moments are.
Right.
And you as a responsible adult can make the decision, well, you know what? Life's too short. Fuck you. I'm
Yeah.
gone. And that's
Right.
okay.
Right.
And you know, there are people that have dealt with me. I'm not just that silly guy that don't want to work with me anymore. Saying, you know, I'm not, as I said to about my wife, I'm not the easiest guy in the world, and I'm not condoning it. I've had
Yeah.
to, I've had to apologize for less than perfect behavior.
Yeah.
I think we all have.
Yes, but you do. You do. That's huge. A lot of people don't apologize. That takes humility. It takes accountability.
Well, the thing is
That's
that, you know where I learned
character.
that? As a parent, you know, as a parent, I've done things as a parent that are probably wrong or said things that I shouldn't have said. You know, as a parent, what you'd learn in life is, oh my God, your words and your actions really affect another human being.
Right,
And
right.
until you have a child, you don't know how much you're affecting another human being.
Right.
So I thought that one day I was going to grow up, have kids, and teach them about the world. But what happened is I grew up and had kids, and they continually teach me about the world.
Right. And I think that when your child sees you apologize to them, that gives them a life lesson. That teaches them about frailty and humanity. It shows them that this person who they look up to, as a child, literally depending on you for food and shelter, they're everything. And when that person can flip the power structure and apologize to you, that's really powerful for a kid.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that even on my podcast. My daughter, who I do it with, we had a really rocky relationship for like 4 years. Horrible.
Let me
And
guess, 16 to 20, 14 to 18? Yeah.
And I ended up in therapy for it with her too.
Wow.
So I've had to, kind of face my shortcomings. And I promise you, in those moments, I thought I was so right. There's no other answer. And I'm getting it done, and I'm raising. This is how you raise a child. And I've made so many mistakes, and so, and I'm such a different person than I was, But and I don't think that's any different than maybe somebody who hasn't had children and just has to deal with other people. There's not.
Oh yeah, I think that when you have children, you're forced to grow or leave. And you're forced to step up and to go to therapy with a child is an opportunity. Like if you go to therapy and everything's going great in your life, you're not going to get anything accomplished. But if you go in there with an agenda and some issues that are raw and in the moment, that's when you can really make changes to yourself.
But I went into therapy thinking, I don't need this. She does. But I went in, she wasn't going to go in if I didn't go in. So, and I thought I was going to have somebody on my side telling, tell her. I was more me. It was more me than her.
All right, listen, I don't want to keep you. You're the best. I love hanging out with you. You're such a good dude. You're so honest and funny. You got some dates coming up. People want to see you live. MGM Grand in Vegas, January 17th and 18th. January 25th at the Buffalo Resort in Santa Fe, New Mexico. January 31st in Detroit, the 19th in Fargo, February 20th in Rapid City, South Dakota, February 21st in Anamia, Minnesota. Wow. The 22nd in New Albany, Ohio, 23rd in Northfield, Ohio. Also, Morristown, New Jersey, Annapolis coming up. Go to howiemandel.com, get yourself some tickets. Check out the podcast, Howie Mandel Does Stuff, which I was lucky enough to be on. It's a lot of fun. It's always silly. And I want to tell you, I started a new segment on this podcast that you didn't know about. There's a trivia contest that happens, and you kind of caught on to it. I just before the show, I do an intro to the show, and I announced that I was going to ask you three trivia questions. And if you got two right, you win a Greg Fitzsimmons t-shirt.
I didn't win a t-shirt.
You did. The questions were, what was Nancy Sinatra's hit song? You said
Oh,
Boots Are
Boots Were
Made for
Made for
Walking.
Walking. I got that.
I said, what were the original six hockey teams? I said, if he gets
Five.
five, I said, if he gets five right, I'll give it to him. You
Oh,
got five.
wow.
So that's two. And then you missed. I said, what's the longest running game show? It's actually Price is Right.
So I got two, though. Right? Did
You
I win
got
the
two out
shirt?
of three. So you want a t-shirt?
I want a shirt. I want a shirt. I want a shirt. I want a Greg Fitzsimmons shirt. I want a shirt. This guy, I want a shirt. I got two out of. Oh my God. Oh
God.
wow.
You did it.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of people is the and you're the inaugural episode of this. This has never been tried before.
Oh wow. Well, it's catching on like wildfire. I feel it.
You feel it? I think it's going to be a meme.
Okay. But I just think it's either catching on like wildfire or I have a urinary tract infection. Something's burning.
Something hurts a little bit. All right, Howie, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, I'll see you soon.
Bye. Be
Bye.
healthy.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.